The last Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, said it was the only game in town. And certainly there are now thousands of drones being used by the U.S. military and the CIA overseas for both surveillance purposes as well as for killing people. And there's a lot of drones that are going to be over our airspace as soon as it opens up in 2015. So it's a topic to be concerned about in terms of national security as well as your own privacy.
What about privacy? Are the drones going to be watching us?
Well, it depends what we allow to happen. You know, it's one of those rare moments, Brian, where we actually have a chance to stop something before it starts. And there are states all over this country that are trying to put into place regulations to say the law enforcement agencies can't use drones to collect information on us without a warrant. But unless we get these kind of measures in place, if people are already worried about NSA spying or other kinds of measures the government has already taken to collect your data, be very worried about drones because they can hover overhead. They can be as small as a wasp or a hummingbird, and you don't even have to know they're there, and they can turn us into a 24/7 surveillance society.
Another issue very important to you is Guantanamo. In fact, earlier this year, you made headlines by interrupting President Obama's foreign policy speech in May, and this was the president's response, and I'm quoting here, "I'm willing to cut that young lady interrupting me some slack because it's worth being passionate about. The voice of that woman is worth paying attention to." What do you think of that?
Well, I always laugh when he says young lady because I'm about 10 years older than he is. But other than that, I think it's great. I think it's great that he validated my intervention and recognize that these are issues that are worth being passionate about, because when you see our government holding people indefinitely in a place like Guantanamo, especially since the majority of them have been cleared for release by Department of Justice, Defense, CIA, Homeland Security, saying they're no threat to us, and many of them picked up absolutely innocent, and yet not only being held for over 11 years, but now being force-fed, that this is something that the American people should be appalled about and say it doesn't represent who we want to be as Americans, and let's do something about it.
He said the voice of that woman is worth paying attention to, but is he really paying attention to it? Guantanamo is still open. The prisoners are still there. The hunger strikers are still there.
Well, that's a good question. And the only thing that he has done since that speech on May 23rd is that he has appointed another envoy in the State Department, because that position was vacant since January. And the new envoy, Clifford Sloan, immediately went to Guantanamo, hopefully got a good taste of how things how bad things are there. And we hope he'll start doing something. But the president has to invoke a waiver process that the Congress put in place and say that it's in our national security interest for these prisoners to be released. Does he have the political will to do that? We don't know.
Did you go to that speech with the intention of interrupting him, or did it just sort of happen? Was it sort of spontaneous?
I went with the intention of listening very carefully to what he had to say about both of those issues, drone warfare and Guantanamo, expecting that he would announce some very good new policy initiatives. And when he was nearing the end of the speech and I didn't hear it, that's when I felt compelled to get up and say something.
Another topic you'll be talking about in Troy on Saturday, Yemen. Why Yemen?
I just got back from there. It's a country that brings both of these issues together, because the drone strikes are hitting people in Yemen, and the majority of the detainees in Guantanamo are from Yemen. So I thought it was important to go there and learn more. We met with everybody from the prime minister and the U.S. ambassador to the human rights ministry to the families of drone victims and the families of Guantanamo prisoners, and heard a lot of stories about how easy it would have been to capture people instead of killing them with drones, and also heard from the family members how much they have gone through over the years to try to get their loved ones released, and how they get absolutely no response from the U.S. government.
This is off topic from what you'll be talking about in Troy on Saturday, but the Trayvon Martin verdict, your thoughts?
I am just heartbroken about that verdict and the message that it sends to young people of color, especially black men in this country, that their lives are not valuable, not important to us. And it's actually the same message that people in poor countries like Yemen are hearing when we kill them with drones by a kind of racial profiling that says any young man of military age in the countries where we're using these drones are militants, and therefore we can just kill them with impunity. So these things are very much related. And I think it's important to talk about domestic issues and foreign policy issues that leave important segments of our society vulnerable and feeling like they're not as valuable as others.
You're also heavily involved in the environment, climate change. We're talking today on a very hot day. It's been hot much of the summer here in the Northeast. Where do you see this debate going?
Well, I see it as another example, Brian, where the president has nice words to offer, but we don't see major changes happening. I have a chance to travel around the world, and I see other countries that are so much more advanced than we are in terms of regulating their industries, in terms of providing good, fast public transportation that gets us away from our dependence on cars, that has cities that have pedestrian areas and all kinds of measures to make them greener and cleaner. And yet we are so behind in all of this. So I think it's going to take a much stronger grassroots movement that puts pressure on the Congress, on the president, and that gives us the kind of momentum that we need to get off of the fossil fuel treadmill that we're on and move into a new age of a green economy.
Healthcare, that's another issue very important to you. The Obama administration recently announced a delay of 1 year in part of the healthcare overhaul, the employer mandate. Do you think this is a retreat on healthcare on part of the White House?
Yes, it's a retreat. It's already a retreat from a retreat from a retreat because we were supposed to have a public option that we never got. I was for a single-payer healthcare system, a Medicare for all kind of system. And so there have already been so many compromises. And now to step back at this point, I think, sends the message that it's open season for the right to attack every single aspect of this policy and keep it from being implemented. So I think it's a big mistake.
How has Code Pink changed since you started it? You're a co-founder of this organization. When was the organization founded? What were the goals then, and how have the goals changed since then?
We started post 9/11 trying to stop the invasion of Iraq because we thought it had nothing to do with 9/11, was a big mistake, which it certainly was. And we continued to say, let's find other ways to deal with our problems of Al-Qaeda, of terrorists who would like to attack us after 10 years of trying the military hammer. It's time to go towards negotiations, treating this as a policing issue, finding individuals who might want to harm us rather than invading and occupying other countries, reducing our military footprint around the world so we won't be so much a subject to attack. For example, the over 800 military bases we have overseas, the only country in the world where that kind of a military footprint exists. So we are still to this day trying to change our foreign policy. I would say under the Bush years, we had a lot of supporters and hundreds of locals around the country. Now we're a smaller organization because many groups thought Obama was going to provide the solution. Unfortunately, that's not true. It really takes a strong grassroots movement to move whoever's in power because this military-industrial complex is a strong one. There are many companies that profit off of continual war, and we've got to build a movement that can turn it around.
Madea Benjamin is the co-founder of Code Pink. She will be speaking on Saturday, this Saturday, July 20th, at 10:30 in the morning at the Troy Public Library, 102nd Street in Troy, on drones, Yemen, Guantanamo, and more. Again, Madea Benjamin, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Brian.